Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the MCU for Dummies. I am dummy number one, Ken. That is dummy number two, Lewis. This is another mid-range show where we're not going through one of our chronological rewatches, I believe, and this is breaking news. If you are a full-time listener to the podcast, you know it's been a debate in the past, but we will soon, the next movie on the list, be covering The Incredible Hulk, not featuring Mark Ruffalo. So, you know, buckle up, because it is a movie that came out that one time. So that is on the list. If you are a big Incredible Hulk fan, you will get your day. Lewis, what have you been doing while the MCU is in pause mode? We're a couple weeks post Falcon Winter Soldier. We are a couple weeks pre Loki and as well Black Widow. So what's been going on MCU wise for you?
We do have a packed schedule coming up, and I am happy that we are looking at The Incredible Hulk, because I remember The Hulk just in DVD format, like in Target, right after Iron Man came out, when the MCU first kicked off and Marvel was bankrupt and we were trying to figure out what all this stuff meant. Yep. I remember the like the front cover of the Hulk DVD and just never seeing it. So I'm happy that I'll get around to watching it eventually. So that's good stuff. But what I've been doing recently, you know, it's cool with the MCU lineup and how delayed it's been with COVID. One of the things that I've been doing is putting together a schedule, trying to figure out like when the shows and movies are going to come out this year. And what's a little disheartening is how much we would have gotten given normal circumstances in the world. Like a lot of this stuff would have already came out. Black Widow was supposed to come out already. We should have gotten Falcon the Winter Soldier much earlier in this whole process. So it would be interesting to see what is, you know, like what a normal role would have looked like if, you know, Doctor Strange was able to give us that one situation where we did not have COVID going throughout the whole entire world. Besides the fact, what I've been up to, taking a bit of a breather here, and I'm filling in some gaps. So you mentioned we had a conversation with Daze Johnston from Inverse.com. Daze mentioned Tom Hiddleston, who is going to be obviously the featured actor of the upcoming TV show Loki. And Tom's ability to do impressions is incredible. There are several videos out there where he's doing impersonations. He does some Owen Wilson. He does Robert De Niro. There's a great one where he's getting dressed by a woman for GQ, and he's like going through the different dialects of someone from Ireland and then someone from like like Edinburgh. And he's just like a very well thought out, deep man.
He's a cool guy.
Yeah.
And I now understand why so many not middle aged, but like the age group under middle aged women are so horny for him on Twitter.
The
like,
man
I get it.
It's just incredible. He's so quiet.
Yes.
Because, you know, I'm not going to, you know, go into any details here, but I do have a specific household situation where one of us is openly very interested in Tom Hiddleston, and the other one is me, and I'm just coming around to it. So I consulted with said individual, and I was just like, what's the deal here? Like what's the thing about Tom? And, you know, my analysis of Mr. Hiddleston is that he's so quiet. But then once like someone asks him a question, like in an interview format, the man just instantly turns on and just takes, like, I mean, he's sitting on a couch in this one YouTube video on the Gordon Grant show. I don't even know if that's his name. And he's got De Niro and Anne Hathaway on the couch. And for that, like 90 seconds to 2 minutes, just takes over everything. And he's the only one there. And it's incredible. So he just has incredible stage presence, and it becomes so apparent as you get to meet Tom outside of the MCU, and then you watch like Loki movies, and you're just like, this is a very talented individual playing this role, and Marvel is lucky to have him.
Yeah, now that you mention that, I wonder what his background is. Like, he does kind of give you that like stage actor-y type thing, you know what I mean?
Like a Hugh Jackman type.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like actually, like really very similar
theater
energy.
Yeah, he's just like, yeah, he's just a force. And you know what? So I'll pull up the Instagram really quick here. But Chris Hemsworth posted like the funniest thing recently. He posted a photo of It's a magazine cover that is from Vulture from May 19, 2009. Okay, and it says, Marvel rolls the dice, casts no name for Thor. Despite rumors that everyone from Shia LaBeouf to Josh Hartnett being cast in Kenneth Brogan's version of Thor, two virtual unknowns will instead be handed the keys to Marvel's franchise. Australian actor Chris Hemsworth, who you might recall from the opening scene of Star Trek, will play the Norse superhero, and Tom Hiddleston has been cast as his nemesis Loki. Let's hope they follow J.J. Abrams' route and put the money they saved in casting straight into special effects.
Oh my goodness.
Vicious.
What
and
a
then
take.
I'll show you.
Who is that from?
The audience. So I don't know if you can see there, but very old photo.
Yeah, wow.
Chris Hemsworth and Tom Hiddleston there on Instagram. Hysterical. So
oh,
just
man.
Hating on the boys there.
We need to send that. We need to send that to Cold Takes
Freezing
Exposed.
Cold Takes.
Like that is a fascinating. Wow, Lewis, that's a great find.
Thank you.
Now I know that Hemsworth was, and I've got Hiddleston's Wikipedia on, and I'll give you a little color there in a second. But I know that Hemsworth was a bit of an unknown, and I know. We're also going to get to the Thor movies in our next grouping of films. So
can't wait for those.
Keep your hats on, folks, which is hilarious because we're like sitting here defending how great Thor and Loki are as like actors and like how perfect they both are for the roles. And then we're going to sit here in a couple of weeks and we're going to talk about how shitty those first two movies were. So, yes, we are going to contradict ourselves in about 2 weeks, but right now, Tom Hiddleston and Chris Hemsworth were perfect choices. That said, Hemsworth was in Cabin in the Woods. That was like, it came out after he was then cast as Thor, but they filmed it before, and he was cast in that movie before he was cast as Thor. So just like what a weird selection that must have been. And they're like, yo, can you get jacked to shit in like a year and a half? And he was like, yeah, absolutely. I'm Australian. Sure. And they were like, okay, do it. And he did. And now that man is like a friggin' rocket. That dude can just a rocket. And Hiddleston, on the other hand, so I got it. Like I said, I got his Wikipedia up here. Just like a fascinating career. He went to, where did he go? He earned a double first in classics, classical studies, and a, Lou, I should say, a double first is a British undergraduate degree.
Okay.
From Cambridge. And then he studied acting at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art. And he was in West End productions before he started film. So he was in Cymbeline, and then Ivanov. Winning awards and like doing all of his crap, like just a really cool dude. And like, isn't it so crazy? And I know we're a little bit off the rails here, but bear with us, folks. Isn't it a little wild how noticeable stage actors are in movies? And don't you wish all of them were stage actors? Because I truly love them more than I could ever love just like a straight up film actor. I know they're like two very separate classes of actor and actress, but like, performer, but like, it is so noticeable how good those stage actors are when you give them space to grow into a character.
Yeah, it is really cool. And I know, you know, we've just taken college level acting classes, which is probably more than the basic American can say.
I think you got an A, Lewis.
I did get an A. And, you know, you get some exposure into method acting, what all that means and such. And I'll echo your point that it is really impressive when you get somebody that comes from a background of theater and is then transformed. You know, one of the things I got from the day's conversation was just this act of like a different medium, the medium of television, the medium of movies. And I just started watching Star Wars, The Clone Wars. And I think of like how interesting the story being told through the TV show medium fits so much better than the movies, which need to really just come out and hit a home run because they're Star Wars movies. But the TV shows can just do so much better at telling the story and such. So where I'm getting at with this is, you get a guy like Hugh Jackman, where there's a great podcast where he goes on Tim Ferriss show, and he's just like, he's just such a deep person where he does singing lessons. He does theater. He does stretch roles like The Greatest Showman. He's going to be on Broadway as the musical man. And he talks a little bit about that. He talks about Wolverine, and you can, you know, say like Wolverine, okay, acting or whatever. But when you listen to him talk about the role, the man gave a shit on the scale of 0 to 100, 110. Like, he cared a lot about that role. And when these movies stand the test of time and you review the performances and such, the people that come from this theater background, really, I don't know, they have a moment. They're just impressive. They're just fascinating. I don't want to say like Dominic Cooper from Mamma Mia, that translates well to, you know, Howard Stark in Iron Man 2 and 3, but the few instances that we are cherry picking here are fun to watch. So I will give us that, but we probably could do some more deep dive research into this, but yeah, I'll agree with you there. Tom Hiddleston did do the voice of Charles Darwin on the Galapagos TV show. So fun fact there.
That is fascinating. I would never have imagined that. I think, Lou, that's a perfect transition. Wow. It's almost like we planned these things, but honestly, we didn't plan.
We did not.
It. Like that, no that idea was we're totally off the rails. Yeah, that was bananas. But that is a nice transition into what I think the crux of this episode will be, Lou, which is we have covered on our chronological, and I always stress that point, our chronological rewatch on the MCU for Dummies, we have gone through the first four films in that process, being Captain America, the First Avenger, Captain Marvel, Iron Man, and Iron Man 2. And Lou, we've talked about some acting, we've talked about how noticeable performances are, we've talked about storytelling and character building. I would like to know today, before we get into our next set of movies, and before we get into our next set of brand new releases on Disney Plus with Loki and Black Widow coming out, I would like to know your three favorite moments or three favorite performances or three favorite story arcs from those first four movies, because there are so many, and I want to know what resonates with Dummy Number Two, Lou,
okay,
as you sit there and rewatch these films.
Well, we're only doing Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2, Captain Marvel, and Captain America First Avenger, right?
Correct.
Okay. So let's go. I think we should go back and forth just to keep things going here. Captain America, I really enjoy just how much of a timepiece it is. And think that it does a really good job of planting you in the 40s, similar to how Captain Marvel plants you in the 90s.
Yeah.
Gives you like that sort of sense there. But for the Captain America role, it is so paramount to this character's development to really state that this is a character from a different time that then has to find himself in the modern age with aliens and such. And we could go into like many different conversations there and how, you know, Bucky Barnes gets played into this and Howard Stark and such. But
we got Winter Soldier is coming up soon enough, my friend.
Yeah. Maybe we can even throw in, because we have talked about Winter Soldier and the Falcon. So maybe we throw that in there too. But I'll kick off the conversation by saying that I really enjoyed how authentic Captain America, the First Avenger, felt from a time period standpoint.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite things now that I am getting more into like the themes and some of the like the subtext to some of these movies and to how they build out this universe, I think one of my top three favorite things is the connection between Iron Man and Captain America. And by that I mean the connection of them coming to terms with who they are as characters, right, within their stories, I should say. So like I think the bigger part of my favorite thing is the Yinsen character in Iron Man 1 and the Dr. Erskine character in Captain America First Avenger, like how parallel they are to like the lessons they teach both of their like superheroes that they're mentoring like randomly. And just like how important both of those dudes are throughout the entirety of those two's character arcs. And like, you very rarely think about it, right? Cause you're very rarely like, you know, oh man, he said it, Erskine said it makes the man, the serum doesn't make the man makes the serum, right? Like all that crap. And Yinsen talking about like his family and like things like that. You like rarely think about it. Like it's never at the forefront, but then you sit there at the end of Endgame, which we'll get to eventually, there'll be like a 9-part episode and you sit there and you're like, wow, like all of those things that they said back in the first movie, right, where both of these two characters were introduced at like a different time period difference of like 60 years, and you're like, wow, that was like super important, like everything that they taught them. So I really like that, especially because throughout the course of the universe, Captain America and then Iron Man don't necessarily sleep in the same bed, you know? Like they're not dorm room buddies. Yeah, so
someone's got to grab the couch at some point.
Exactly.
Here's a fun thought. Do you think, because now that it's been corporatized, there's really no one holding up the MCU, do you think we will see another pair like the Captain America Iron Man in the future? Yeah. Like God. 20, 30 years down the line, do you think there will be like another group that will give this much of a shit about? Because I don't think like the new Captain America, Falcon, Sam Wilson, he'll probably play a role in Avengers 5, or whatever that comes out to be. But I don't know if...
It's going to be hard, Lou. Your question is a good one, and it's one that makes me nervous to like really get invested in everything, because you can never do this again for the first time. You know? And not to say that I think Thanos and like the Infinity Saga was like as good as it could possibly get. It could definitely get better. They could definitely tell better stories. They could cast even better, like with different actors and actresses and performers, et cetera, et cetera. But you cannot put this cat back in the bag. The Infinity Saga happened. Those first 23 movies were legit, and they were the first time you met these characters, and they were the first time they told this story, and they were the first major consequence of the universe. Can they do that again? No, right? Because you can never have your first time again.
That's what they say in, you know, in high school.
For all you prom goers listening, you can never do that again. I mean, yeah, you'll do it again, hopefully, but it will never be the same as the first one, right? So it's impossible to replicate. However, you have to try, and like and I think I'm more invested in Elizabeth Olsen's Red Scarlet Witch than I am like Sam and Bucky, and only because I felt that more emotionally like during that Disney Plus show. And I think that is going to be the real kicker, because at first, the first part of the MCU, when this whole thing started, was just like beat 'em up, right? It was beat 'em up, beat 'em up, beat 'em up. And it was fun to watch things get beaten up. And then you saw like the post-credit scenes, and you're like, oh, cool, like that guy's in this movie. Now we expect that, right? Like that's not a surprise anymore. That's an expectation. So if they're going to even come close to replicating any sort of investment that people had in the first saga, right, the Infinity Saga, then it is going to have to be emotional. That is the only way. What do you think?
I don't even know who you are.
Yeah, you will.
You ruined. You took everything from me. I don't even know who you are.
I did. That is like such a good line, and I've seen even some like really good points about that. Like the Thanos that we knew, right, that we met in Infinity War, that we watched beat the shit out of the Avengers, like, he won.
Yeah.
He won, then he died.
Yeah. Right? There's a great podcast from the Ringer Network, and it's hosted by an individual, Van Lathan, and him and another individual go deep into like the racial side of Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So it's some good stuff from the perspective
really
of,
cool,
I believe, two African-American men. But one of them makes a really good point when they're talking about Infinity War, and they say that it's this idea that everyone's story was kind of already told, and then it allowed Marvel to then focus on the villain, which is so rare. In other movies where you have like Ronan the Accuser, or you have Maleficent. Well, who's the guy from the second Thor that sucked? That everybody hates. He's got
the ice giant.
No. His name's hold on. Thor, evil people. I'll look it up. Evil guy. He's in the second movie. Hold on.
Not
Jane Austen.
No.
Who? Jane. I hope Natalie Portman comes back at some point.
She is
Malekith the Accused. The Accursed.
Oh yes. Lewis, your girl Natalie Portman is already cast in Thor 4.
She's going to become Lady Thor.
Yes, correct.
So Malekith, I was confused about because before I got into the whole MCU this year, I saw he was like on a list of like top bad guys, and I kept watching. And I was like, when is it going to happen? And yeah, I don't know if it's like him and I think the evil guy from Doctor Strange are like the two most questionable characters. That guy's got like just cigarette ashes for eyeballs. Yeah,
Mads Mikkelsen, though, he's a cool dude.
Yeah, not a good look for him. But Malekith, yeah, looks weird, alien type dude. So yeah, Thanos, big fan of. We could do a whole big podcast on that thing.
Oh yeah.
Just jump into the next point. Maybe one of the things that I did not like a lot is just like the stories that are told in Iron Man. And they're definitely saved by Robert Downey Jr. being Robert Downey Jr. But like the premise of each story is just like really kind of tough to rewatch. The first movie, it's like, this is cool because it's new. The second one, you got Birdman swinging, you know, electrical ropes. And the third one, you got the Manador, who is it? The Mandarin, who's not really the Mandarin.
Yeah, the Mandarin, who's the fake Mandarin. And then we're going to learn in Shang-Chi that even this guy is fake Mandarin. So, like, just too many fake Mandarins in Iron Man 2. Iron Man 3.
I guess that's for how important Iron Man is. Those movies are just like question marks. They're still fine and they make sense and they add to the stories and such, but it's just like they're hard to rewatch.
Yeah. I think I think Captain America and the First Avenger is a perfectly fine movie, but I don't like where it came out release date wise. Now, we're watching this chronologically, so this may be an unfair criticism of me, and I would accept that. If anybody listening says Ken's thing he didn't like is unfair because you're watching it chronologically, so his response is stupid, I would probably agree with you. However, because I do know where it came out release date order in within the MCU, I hate how much of like an afterthought Captain America was.
What do you mean?
So let me make sure I get the release order right, because I don't want to fudge it, my man.
I think it came after Thor. I think it was Iron Man, Hulk.
Let's see. Thor. Let's see. Yeah, so we got Iron Man, Hulk, Iron Man 2, Thor, Captain America, First Avenger. And then, so Captain America, First Avenger comes out in July of 2011. And then in April of 2012, Avengers comes out. And I struggle because that Captain America movie only exists to give you the Avengers.
It
doesn't really have a standalone purpose. Let's be totally honest. It is there to bring you Steve Rogers, which is perfectly fine.
It gives you a lot more, though. It gives you Winter Soldier.
Sure, yeah. It gives you Bucky's intro. It gives you Peggy Carter. Like, it does the comic book Steve Rogers, and it does it well. I just don't like that, like, the guy who becomes the Avengers, right? You are always thinking about Steve Rogers, right? He's the guy. Like, it comes out after Iron Man 2. It comes out after Thor. And it is there just to set up the Avengers. I just don't like the order of them that they came out in. But I think, like I said earlier, I always get burpy. Honestly, guys, I don't even know what I'm doing to get so burpy during these things. I couldn't even begin to tell you. But it's just one of those things that sits a little wrong with me is the order of them. But, you know, but like I said, if you were going to push back on me and say that because we're watching in chronological order, I should shove that opinion right up my ass, I'd probably agree with you.
Yeah, no, I totally get where you're coming from. I think it's a respectable take there. I heard something, I'm trying to find a book just to note it, but I can't find it. But it talks a little bit about like pre-MCU and how these Marvel movies came to be. And there seems to have been a focus group with a bunch of kids from like the toy perspective of trying to figure out like which toys were the most marketable. And then that was going to be like the first movie was going to take the stab at doing that. And the feedback was Iron Man. Yeah. Kids like the fact that he was like robotic and the colors and like red and yellow. And it then makes sense that the Hulk is number two because he's just like, he's big and green and smashes things and such. So if that is true, maybe I'll do more research on this. If that is true, it makes sense, because in Thor, it's like, all right, whatever. I don't know. I'm just totally speculating, spitballing here. Yeah. It would make sense that the most human character that really requires the most story to be told comes, you know, later, before the Avengers movie comes out. So, I mean, nothing gripped society like Iron Man did, just because it's like people love technology stuff but freak out when, you know, we have webcams on our
Stop
doors.
It. Stop it.
But we all want like Tony Stark and
Lou,
and
do you
stuff.
Mean the webcam that I just got injected into my arm?
Yeah, the vaccine. I saw this hilarious thing on TikTok. This guy was like, I'm a former Army Ranger from Afghanistan. And he's like, you know what I have to say to people that think that there's a microchip in your vaccines? He's like, I was in the middle of the most important war in the last 30 years for this country, and none of us could talk to each other because of our communication systems. He's like, we had all of the best technology and we needed like four different transmitters that sometimes almost worked for people to talk across the desert. He's like, these people are not as smart as you think. That's a side note. We're not getting conspiracy here. We're not trying to turn the frogs gay like Alex Jones. But if that is the case with Iron Man, it makes sense, because Iron Man did grip a lot of people. Captain America is the most story of the Phase 1 movies. I'm with you. I'm not going to put it down. I thought you were going to say that you didn't get a standalone Hawkeye movie before the first Avengers came out, because maybe you were a little confused when you saw Hawkeye come and you're like, who is this guy?
Well, I did see him in Thor, and I wish to God I never did, and I never will again. However, I have to see him on my television for like 6 to 8 episodes so that he can be gracefully put into the ground.
It's gonna be like a Dawson Creek where it's just like really like bad dialogue, tough. After like a good year of shows, it's gonna be really tough to watch Hawkeye. Here's a quick side note. So in Iron Man 2, we get Natasha Romanoff, who's obviously the Black Widow. No one calls her the Black Widow, which I guess is going to be something we discuss in the movie.
I certainly hope somebody sometime says it. Like, we finally got Scarlet Witch, and like nobody had called her that previously, and now we're all just kind of fingers crossing that maybe they'll call her Black Widow at some point.
Very confusing. But how do you think this ages, this kind of plopping her in episode Iron Man 2, and then she's so paramount to the rest of the MCU timeline, and then the standalone movie comes out? You know, you can't, it would not have been a good business decision, in my opinion, to lead with a character like Black Widow in Phase 1 and Phase 2. So I don't blame them. But obviously, Scarlett Johansson as the Black Widow, Natasha Romanoff, is so important to the story. How do you think this ages 20 years out?
It's weird, because her first introduction is like very horny, like with Tony Stark, is like just like uncomfortable, right? Like, they're only talking about how big her breasts are. And it's like very noticeably uncomfortable.
Like, those are those Josh Whedon directed Avenger movies.
Apparently, I forgot who it was, but I heard he like, I forgot who it was now. I saw the tweet earlier today, but apparently like he threatened to like ruin somebody's career if they didn't appear in one of his movies. Gal Gadot. Yeah.
Like, I'll ruin your career. And she's like, I'm going to go tell everyone, and they're going to side with me because they like me more.
Yeah. Josh Whedon is a weird dude.
Yeah. He sucks.
So, like, I think like that part, like when you rewatch that movie came out in what, 08, I believe. Iron Man 2 came out in what year? Iron Man 2, I have it right in front of me. Don't tell me, I'll hurt you. I'll hit you. I'll come right over there and I'll hit you. Iron Man 2 came out in 2010. And it, like, is very uncomfortable when you rewatch it now. And you're like, okay, like, we don't have to, like, yes, she's very pretty. We're all aware. It's like, you know what it's like, Lou? It's like Chris Pratt in the new Jurassic Parks, where, like, every single scene, somebody's like, look how much of a badass this guy is. And it's like, well, if you didn't tell us, we can see him doing badass shit. We can see Scarlett Johansson being attractive. You don't need to tell us, right? Like, if you write a scene of a party and have somebody come up to you and be like, this is so cool and fun, right? Like, it's supposed to look cool and fun. You shouldn't have to tell us that it's cool and fun. We know Scarlett Johansson's attractive. We know Tony Stark's a pig. You don't have to tell us every scene how much of a pig he is. You know what I mean? Like, it's a little uncomfortable. But I would say that she really grows into that. And she's a very talented actress, very talented performer. We all know that. She's, like, widely acclaimed in other things that she does. Marriage Story, obviously, being, like, the big culmination of her career so far. But, like, I think it ages pretty well, honestly. And I think you're right. I think everybody for the longest time now that we're 23 movies in has been waiting for a solo Black Widow film. And you're eventually going to get it. Pandemic be damned. Right. So I think they maybe waited a touch too long, I would say. But with her story arc, I think it makes perfect sense. And I think she's such an important character. And even though Jeremy Renner can, like, drive a Jeep with his guitar into a forest and never come back, and everybody would be very happy about that. Like, you need those, like, human characters in these stories that, like, even though they're super, you know, strong, or like a ninja, like Black Widow, or like you're a sharpshooter with a bow and arrow, like, you need those types of people in those stories just to ground the audience into them. As, like, not aliens and not Norse gods and not made out of iron and not a super soldier and not a giant green monster. Like, you just need those things to, like, ground the people into the story. And I think she does, like, a phenomenal job. I hope that answered your question. I think it did.
I think so. I think
thank
it,
you.
It does well. And the MCU does a good job of going from Scarlett Johansson knocks out a bunch of men, and then they show the close-up with, I want to make sure you're done drinking after this, basically just show a close-up on the actress's Cranston.
Yes.
Right there, the gap between the legs, and it's like, oh, look at the storytelling perspective of Jon Favreau. They go from that angle to then, hey, Peter Parker, you got something for me? All the way in Endgame, and then it's like women power, and, you know, coming at it. So there's progress to be made there. I'm not defending anybody. It's just they're from the what I would say is the majority of the viewership of these movies and during that time of just, like, mainly white people, mainly just, like, suburban, finding sitcom stuff funny.
It's
like
us.
They were up, like, that was up the alley of the early 2000s before Me Too kicked off, before we started having more public conversations about this. That stuff was funny, and it did well for these movies when there wasn't a storyline to carry them. I'm not saying it was good or great, but it is a great testament when you rewatch these movies on how much more ownership they take closer to the year 2021 than when they kicked off in 2008 2010. They were just basically, like, you know, frat boy exclusives, and now they're, like, getting at real human stories of depression and death and coping and race, and it's good progress.
Yes, absolutely. I think you put it in a very good way. Like, it is noticeable that, and I don't think anybody would ever sit there and say, like, Marvel has been, like, really, really good at being subtle about their messaging. Like, they're, like, sometimes, like, very heavy-handed. And I think that's important when you have such, like, a large platform, right? Like, you talk about the scene in Endgame where the, you know, the girls are all in the, you know, and they take the gauntlet and they go do their thing. And it, like, it's very noticeable, right? Like, that's what they were trying to do. And that's perfectly fine, right? Like, it's, and some of the stuff in Falcon and Winter Soldier with the race stuff and, you know, getting pulled over by the cops and the speech at the end by Sam Wilson. Like, it's not subtle, but it's not supposed to be subtle. They're not sitting there going, I want you to read into this and come to your own conclusion. They're going, black people are racially targeted by police. And then they're going, black people feel like they're being targeted by a lot of the things and a lot of the policies that our government puts into place. Oh, and also women are just as strong as men, and look at them, they're superheroes and they can take the gauntlet just like Iron Man can. So, but like nobody is asking them to be subtle, but you're right. I think it's important to remember that these movies came out in a time where that was funny, right? Where Louis C.K. was funny while he was jerking off in front of anybody who would get locked in a room with him. Like,
yeah,
it's a different world now, and you can't look at these movies and not talk about it, because it happened and it was real, and we should all know that, like, that was stupid and it sucked, right? And it's important, like Iron Man, for as important as it is to like the grand zeitgeist of pop culture in 2021, like Iron Man kicked off an entire billion-dollar industry, multi-billion-dollar industry, but at the same time, it's got some problematic shit in it, and most of it has to deal with Black Widow, and that woman who is referred to as trash by your goopy friend Gwyneth Paltrow. Yeah. So, like, those things are important to remember. Lou, I don't want to run too long here. So
I'm dying here. I'm on E right now, and there's a gas shortage because Biden.
Okay, you watch yourself, because I'm living the gas shortage, okay? I can't leave the house. Biden. Give me your favorite performance, and this is where we'll end. Give me your favorite performance from a non-Avenger.
Oh,
in the first four movies.
Jeff Bridges as Obadiah Stane.
Box of scraps!
They had this interview with Jeff Bridges where he basically says, like, the producers for Iron Man are like a high school crew with a lot of money. And they're just, like, winging it. And I think, yeah, Jeff Bridges is hysterical. The villains of Iron Man 1, 2, and 3 are just all-time classic performances. Yeah. They're not great, but they're just like just hysterical when you look back on it. So Obadiah Stane yelling, "Tony Stark made this in a cave with a box of scraps." Is just, yeah, iconic for the first movie.
Yes.
And the fact that he gets high a lot, I think it's just hysterical. He's just this like stoner that was like, "Yeah, I'll be in the first Iron Man. You got Robert Downey Jr., yeah, I'll be in that movie."
He's the dude, man. He's the dude. Yeah, no, yeah. Jeff Bridges is a really good call. I'm sticking on Iron Man 2, and for as shitty as Iron Man 2 was, and it is probably one of the worst films of the entire 23-movie saga, Sam Rockwell as your boy Justin Hammer is so unhinged and so naturally fucking crazy that it feels so right. And if anybody is a Corner Booth Show listener, he reminds me very much of third partner, Carl. But like, he's got this chaotic energy that does not, like, with a lot of actors, like, you know what? What's his name? Pascal, the guy who plays the Mandalorian.
Pedro Pascal.
Like, his performance in Wonder Woman 1984, it felt mildly forced. It was a fun performance, but it felt like he was acting crazy, right? Sam Rockwell as Justin Hammer just felt naturally fucking insane.
Yeah.
Eating his ice cream with a fork and knife, you know, sitting in like this weird airplane hangar. Like, just so cool and so unhinged and so chaotic, but so natural. And I hope that he is still somewhere in this Marvel universe, just like making random Iron Man suits that he's going to wear and eat ice cream in at some point in the future.
That scene where he's showing Don Cheadle all of the guns and he's just listing everything like a crazy man. He's got these gloves on that like barely fit on his hands. Just so iconic. I know we're wrapping it up here, but I want to just like make one little plug, which if for the listeners, if you have not watched on Disney Plus, the Assembled documentary series, I would highly suggest watching that. And I believe the other series is called Legends. These are two series that are growing as shows get released, and they're really fun. Assembled is a behind-the-scenes look at WandaVision and Falcon and Winter Soldier. And yep. if you're new to the MCU, Legends is a documentary where it's like 8-minute clips and they're cut up from the movies that show the characters that are being revealed in the shows, if that makes sense. So they've done
Vision, that's really cool.
They've done Wanda, and it shows you basically how the story has gotten from A to Z from like what we know right now, but like with clips from TV and movie, and then it's like you can find this person here. But a really cool scene that I just want to highlight here as my final piece before we sign off is in Assembled, in the second episode, which they're like 50 minutes long. For Falcon the Winter Soldier, they talk about that scene that Ken was alluding to where Sam Wilson, formerly the Falcon, now Captain America, big spoiler, get over yourself, is giving this monologue about race and oppression and everybody that is returning back to society after the blip. And what that just means for folks that have just always been oppressed. They don't know anything different. They don't know what it's like, or they do know what it's like to just always be from the bottom fighting it up. And the director of Falcon the Winter Soldier, Malcolm Spellman, let me just make sure I got his name correctly. I think it's Malcolm Spellman.
Malcolm Spellman,
yeah. Malcolm Spellman talks about how him and Anthony Mackie were on the phone for multiple hours leading up to that scene, just talking about what it means for they're two men of color, to create the dialogue where it's not preachy and it's direct and there's statements that make sense and he's speaking from the heart and it's not like a soapboxy part too. So you get a lot of cool behind the scenes footage there. You get a lot of Sam and Bucky wearing Under Armour, talking about how the show, and particularly that episode is very unique because they talk a lot about the logistics behind COVID and how that impacted the show. And I think Falcon the Winter Soldier obviously got a lot of budget from Disney and Marvel on this, and the COVID plot line, how it affects the story, how it affects the actual filming, the locations and such, is really interesting. So that would be my big plug of the audience. Go watch Assembled on Disney Plus, WandaVision, Falcon the Winter Soldier.
Fascinating. That's really interesting. I heard Mr. Spellman was told not to talk about that storyline getting cut anymore. He was on a podcast, I forget, and I heard this through a YouTube video that I had watched recently. But apparently, Spellman had gotten a cryptic call from one Mr. Kevin Feige, telling him to essentially shut the fuck up. Okay.
Like, is this you, Kevin?
Yeah. And if Kevin Feige calls you, you fucking listen. Okay. That man is like a very nerdy, weird Jesus figure in this world that we've created. So, Mr. Spellman, if you'd like to come on and talk to us about it off the record, we'd love to have you. Either way, Lou, a lot of fun tonight.
A lot of fun.
Really enjoyed it.
What do we got next?
My dude, we're confirming the schedule, okay? Lou and I, listen, let me peel back the curtain a little bit for everybody to listen, okay? Let me give you a little bit behind the scenes, little Assembled.
Underneath the Komodo. That's my favorite.
Yes, a little MCU for Dummies Assembled version really quickly. Lou and I, once we wrap up, once I hit the end on the record button, Lou and I are confirming the schedule for the future slate of MCU for Dummies. There is going to be a continued movie rewatch, I promise you that. We will have Incredible Hulk is going to be our next film. Okay, that is next chronologically. Ed Norton is coming to the MCU, and then he's going out. Okay? The Hulk is sticking. Ed Norton is leaving. So
unfortunately.
Yes, and we are confirming this. We don't know if that will be next week. We may have another interview at some point. We may want to recap some other things that have happened on Disney Plus. We may want to talk about the release schedule for Phase 4. There are so many things that are happening in the MCU, even though nothing is being released, that we just need a minute to formalize a schedule. And once we have it, we will share it, and you will be the first to know. Who am I talking to? I'm talking to you, dear listener. You will be the first to know. I promise you that. But in the meantime, we hope you have enjoyed our little look back at the first four movies that we have covered. And I will say, if you have enjoyed this podcast, go back in time, give the rest of the MCU for Dummies a listen, especially, and I'll plug it again, the conversation we had with Daze Johnston, please give that a listen. It was a lot of fun, really super informative on the future of the MCU, as well as some of the deeper subtext of some of the other things that we've covered. I will say that if you enjoy listening to my voice and you like Lewis's voice and you think we're quite soothing, give a like and subscribe. Smash that subscribe button, because I am a big moron. So you just smash that subscribe button. Go listen to the rest of the shows on the Corner Booth Network, including the Corner Booth Show with myself, Lewis, and our bud Siege, and the Mets Exchange. Ding, ding, ding. If you've got Dogecoin, you should have sold it last week. I am not feeling it this week either. But the Mets Exchange is less sad than the Dogecoin current structure. So give that a listen if you are a long-suffering New York Mets fan or just a Major League Baseball fan and want your fix on what's going on around the league. So plenty of stuff on the Corner Booth Network, including MCU for Dummies. I am Dummy Number One, Ken. That is Dummy Number Two, Lewis. Anything you want to leave him with, Louie?
I don't even know who you are.
We'll see you next time, folks. Thanks for listening.